Well, it's still April 1st in some time zones. We're moving into April 2nd already as this year clips along. We're going to be talking with Buck Wolf in a moment. Buck is the executive editor of the Huffington Post, and he deals with weird news, and he's got all kinds of stories for us. So stand by your radio. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Buck Wolf, as I mentioned, executive editor of Trends and Weird News at the Huffington Post. He has previously served as an entertainment news producer at ABC News, senior correspondent at AOL News, of course, and managing editor of Court TV Online. He is the executive director, works with our friend Lee Spiegel, and here Buck is to talk about all kinds of weird things on Coast to Coast. Perfect night for you, Buck. Welcome back.
Thank you, George. It's beautiful to be here.
What's new with you? What have you been up to?
Oh, man. Well, today's the busy time of the year. It's April 1st. It's April Fool's Day. At least, like, it is still in your time zone.
That's right. In many people. Of course, I'm in St. Louis right now, so I clipped, I'm in the 1 a.m. hour already. But on the West Coast, you're absolutely right.
Just look back at what fools we were.
Oh, my gosh. I used to remember April Fool's Day as a kid, trying to pull all kinds of funny little jokes. Some of them worked. Some of them I was able to pull off, and some others did not. You have seen the same thing. You've seen pranks backfire, haven't you?
Yes. Well, what's happened in recent years is that April Fool's has gone from a kid's holiday to a opportunity for corporations to make their mark, to spread a little campaign, to put themselves in the press. So what you have, like, this year is a company that I had never heard of previously, Plunge Paw Perfect Company, come online and claim that it was inventing a dog bra.
They got a
picture published all over social media of a dog in a brassiere, and it's actually like just a little prank put on by the Third Love Company, a lingerie company that got more press today than it ever did in the past.
I remember years ago, Buck, when I was a news director here in St. Louis at the NBC station, KSDK Channel 5, and I had hired a reporter, great reporter. His name was and is Aaron Mermelstein. That a great name all by itself. And he did an April Fool's spoof that still lives on in St. Louis. He went out with our staff, and they put marshmallows in a tree, all over this tree. And then he would have people come by and look at the marshmallow tree while he was videotaping people and things like that. And he even had one of our workers who was a Mexican-American. He dressed him up in a hat as if he was a farmer. And, you know, he was harvesting the marshmallows off the tree. And people just fell for it. So we did the story as a legitimate marshmallow tree story. And I've got to tell you, Buck, the calls we got from people who wanted to, one, go see the tree, or two, buy a tree like that so they could have marshmallows in their backyard. Absolutely unbelievable. It how people would just fall for things like that.
It is hilarious the life that some of these pranks have. Of course, one of the all-time great April Fool's pranks goes back to the BBC in 1957. And the BBC, you don't really think of a news organization having that much humor, but British correspondents on TV, and TV was a young medium then in 1957, reported a record spaghetti harvest in the Italian Alps, and they set up pictures of Italian women in the traditional garb, like they would if they were picking grapes, except they were harvesting spaghetti from a spaghetti tree, like with no hint of humor, and they called it a bumper crop, and they were talking about the dangers of spaghetti weasels, and this. The switchboard at the BBC was jammed with hundreds of people who wanted to know where they could get fresh spaghetti or create their own spaghetti farm. And that is really the gold standard, I think, in media April Fool's pranks.
I think so, too. I remember a news director, I think he was in Boston years ago, talked about a volcano that had erupted in Massachusetts. I don't think there are any volcanoes in Massachusetts. And he scared enough people with something that was pretty serious. He got fired. He got fired for that. You know, I've always looked at April Fools and April 1st as a time to do things without hurting people and you know, making them jump off bridges. It's very important. There's that fine line, isn't there?
Well, yeah, but you never know when a joke is going to backfire. And so, like, you know, sometimes you really know that things will get you into trouble. The shock jocks Opie and Anthony really put their career on the line. In 1998, not so long ago, they reported that the mayor of Boston, Tominino, had been killed in a car crash in Florida, and nobody thought it was funny. And it was another one of those times where those guys really went over the edge and shot themselves.
Wasn't there a TV station in Seattle, too, that talked about the Space Needle, that it had fallen?
Yes. Another time, 1989, and that's King TV, a big station, and they reported that the Space Needle had fallen.
Oh,
and that prompted frantic calls to the police, and people weren't laughing.
No.
You could see how if a radio station reports that, people are going to react.
How did the origins of April Fools even start, Buck? Were you able to find that out for us?
Oh, yes. Well, it's kind of murky, okay? But it's actually one of the oldest holidays on your calendar. It goes back to the year 1564. King Charles of France is embracing the Gregorian calendar that we use now,
mm-hmm,
and leaving behind the Roman calendar, the past. So when France was doing that, New Year's Day shifted to January 1st, and they previously celebrated New Year's in the spring. And what happened was, for the first few years, when they move a holiday like that, there are some French people who are going to come out in the spring celebrating New Year's. And those people became essentially the first April Fools. And it moved from being a French holiday to all across Europe. I mean, there is evidence that Jonathan Swift in 1713 was reporting on that day that he was going to a certain pub to have a drink with an executed criminal who came back from the dead, and people actually showed up at that pub looking for Jonathan Swift and this man who was reborn, and April Fools, the joke's on them.
Some of these jokes do backfire, don't they?
Well, that one didn't hurt all that much. Actually, you know, if you go through all these pranks, and you know, they're just like themes that come back again and again. John Chancellor, famous from NBC News all those years,
mm-hmm,
you know, took a cue from the marshmallow tree that you were talking about before, and the spaghetti tree that the BBC was talking about. And he said that America was recording a bumper pickle crop from the pickle tree. And he said that he had a great pickle orchard himself. And, of course, it was all a joke, but people were calling up NBC News like it was true.
I love it. Now, there have been some horrible things happen when people would hear these stories. There was one in Sri Lanka where people went crazy, didn't they?
Well, here's what happened. The news outlet at their local newspaper reported like bogus numbers in a lottery game. So angry residents were calling up to collect their prizes, and they were not happy when they were told that the numbers that were called by this newspaper were false. April Fool's. Not so funny.
Now, I could see on one hand how the media would have done that as a joke, right?
Yes.
But I guess if you had the winning numbers and they didn't win, you'd be very upset.
No.
How'd you like to win $80 million in Powerball and find out they made the numbers up?
Yeah, I mean, you have to keep in mind what Mark Twain famously said, the 1st of April is the day we remember what we are the other 364 days of the year. Fools.
Are kids still playing these games in school?
I am sure, because April Fool's is like another holiday that's been turned into a little industry. I mean, it's not as sort of quaint as years ago when you just sort of like hung the kick me prank in someone's butt.
Now, what other weird news? I mean, you and Lee have the greatest assignments to come up with these incredible stories that we read.
I didn't prank Lee today. I did see him. He was busy writing about that floating city in the sky in China.
Yeah, he loves that stuff. He really loves
that story. Right, but actually some real things happened April Fool's Day. If you go back to 1789, Congress had its first session, April Fool's Day. Isn't that prophetic or what?
Yeah, exactly. They never learned.
Of course. Yeah, in fact, in Congress, they should really honor that day a little more, because it says a lot about what's going on.
Yep.
The invention of the yo-yo, 1929, on April Fool's Day.
Uh-huh.
Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, those televangelists, they were married in 1961, April Fool's Day.
Well, that eventually crashed and burned, didn't it?
Oh, my gosh, did it. And I have to say that, like, also, the first President Bush installed a horseshoe pit in the White House in 1988. It was removed by Clinton, but it's another sort of, like, news event that happened on April Fool's Day. Maybe that one didn't get a lot of press, but from my notes, I found that it did happen.
Have you always, Buck, been interested in the weird?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. You know, for me, I went to journalism school, went to Columbia, and I reported in business. I was working at Knight Ritter during the first World Trade
Center. Sure, Center. The great company. They once owned the Detroit Free Press.
And all those great family papers.
Yep.
It sort of morphed into McClatchy, but it was a great place to start. And I was reporting on business then. And in 1995, I went over Court TV. There was this little trial going on involving a football player called O.J. Simpson.
Uh-huh.
That swallowed me up for the next few years of my life.
They sure did.
After that, well, things just, courts and entertainment and pop culture all merged into one, and I drifted into weird news.
They were saying today that knife that they found at his site was not part of that case at all.
Oh, well, George, you know, I think...
How would they know that?
Well, they would do forensic tests on that knife, and that knife had been around for a while. My theory of it is this. We all know that there was a miniseries on TV earlier this year on the O.J. Simpson trial.
That's
it
right.
Did very, very well. And what would be better publicity for that TV show.
That's true.
Than a possible knife that would have said an awful lot about one of America's most infamous trials and crimes.
Well, it surely would have been great timing, wouldn't it?
To me, I think it's more than curious. I think it was something that was trotted out to help promote a TV show. And really, all along, even if it was a likely murder weapon, it's hard to get forensic evidence that would prove either way if it was definitely the knife.
Buck,
but I think they could decide by the size of the knife and the wounds on that poor woman, Nicole Brown Simpson, and his friend, Goldman, that this was the murder weapon. And I tell you something, you know, if you saw the police photos and read about them, that woman's poor head was torn off her body almost.
Yeah, and it was a serrated knife too. I don't think this one was that they found at all. But
right.
You're right about the publicity.
He just didn't measure up. And the moment I saw that, I said, "Wow, that is one great, great piece of PR." I mean, the only thing about it is that it wasn't found on April Fool's Day.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's one reason to feel a little cynical about this holiday. I mean, of course, all these holidays come and go, and each year people mark, you know, get a little more cynical about all the Christmas advertising, and even Halloween has been commercialized. But April Fool's Day, in its own way, has become this holiday that a lot of big companies take as an opportunity to just sort of get their name in the press.
And a lot of people have forgotten about this day, Buck, as a fun day to do little pranks. I can't tell you how many people I've run into today who really didn't even think about it as April 1st or April Fool's Day. Just didn't even hit them.
I'd like to say that I woke up this morning and I was very happy to get this fan letter from a kid at an Alabama high school who is doing a book report on some of my work from ABC News. And I read it, and I read it, and I responded to the email. It was sent by this kid and his teacher. And I said, "Thank you very much. And your letter brought a smile to my face." And then I thought, "Oh my gosh, which one of the guys who worked for me, April Fool's Day, pranked me?"
Did you ever find out?
I haven't found out. I bet it was Lee.
Could have been Lee. They won't go public, will they? Did Charles Fort, Buck, 40 in times, did he have any influence on some of the things you've done?
Well, the magazine that he inspired, 40 in times, is absolutely the gold standard in examining unexplained phenomena, mm-hmm. and documenting stories that the rest of the press just wouldn't take on. And really, to this day, all of us who do this kind of thing love the richly detailed stories that have come out of the 40 times.
Oh, I love it. I mean, I just I've gotten a lot of story ideas from them. And Charles Fort in his day was amazing. I mean, to pick up these stories. I mean, he had stories, as you know, Buck, of frogs falling from the sky and just weird little things like that, but they were just so fascinating.
And they were true.
Yeah.
And when they weren't true, they were examined and considered. And you learned an awful lot about life and a rigorous way of looking at things. And to me, there's Fort and there's Robert Ripley. And Ripley, to me, was the American equivalent, the guy who
was a giant
from every quarter of the earth before there was mass media to prove that there were things like shrunken heads and to prove that there were cows with six legs and to prove that a lot of the things that you talk about that you think can't exist actually exist.
They love those, Buck. We're going to come back. We're going to take some phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, back with Buck Wolf, of course, the executive editor of the Huffington Post's Weird News section. And, of course, we're going to get to your calls, too. Maybe you can share your stories with us as well as we lead into open lines later on tonight. Buck, we were talking about why people are so fascinated by all this. I mean, you were bringing up Ripley's Believe It or Not. People love those stories and those different things that happen. And it's still strong today. Case in point, my show and your section at the Huffington Post. Why do people love this stuff so much?
I think it cuts to one point that's just true about life itself, and that is the truth is stranger than fiction. And there are things that you can see and document that are just wild. And science is showing us stuff all the time that we previously thought was impossible. And when we can take cameras to remote parts of the world. We see things that we can't believe. I mean, today we were looking at a deep sea slug, a deep sea snail from the ocean that you don't see too much, that looks exactly like a bunny rabbit. It's a bunny rabbit deep under the water. And it looks fluffy, and it has two floppy ears and a bushy tail, just like a rabbit. And that is not an April Fool prank. The April Fool's pranks that come in are actually a lot more run-of-the-mill.
Yeah. You know? I would like to believe that a lot of the things we see on Mars, for example, from the rovers, are authentic fossils and artifacts. But like you say, is it possible that you can get a rock that looks like a petrified iguana and things like that?
Oh, I think it's absolutely possible. I mean, all the time we'll see. Well, and if you go to national parks, there are naturally occurring rock phenomena that look like something else. And part of what we do as humans is that we see things in the clouds and whatever. That doesn't mean that there hasn't been other creatures, possibly ETs, on other planets. I mean, the greatest minds in the world are very open and anticipate the day that one day we'll make contact with another intelligent species in the universe. But I think most of the pictures that come back, first of all, a lot of them are chilling. A lot of them raise a lot of questions, and a lot of them are worthy of examination. But a lot of the stuff we do see looks like something when it can be explained away.
How did you find our buddy Lee Spiegel and his stories? Because Lee has always been interested in this, even during his radio days a long time ago. Did he migrate to you, or did you just meet each other? How did that happen?
Well, I'll tell you something. When I was a kid, I listened to Lee Spiegel on WNBC.
That's right.
My boyhood hero. He had a show called Edge of Reality, and it was similar to yours, or it anticipated the kind of thing that you do now. And as a kid, Lee's about 15 years older than me. he was a guy who was talking about things that you didn't hear in the rest of the press, and that people wouldn't talk about at all, and they wouldn't even consider. I mean, this is back in like the 70s and 80s. People wouldn't talk about ETs or the possibility of life in the universe, which everyone now says, you know, somewhere out there, space is infinite for all we know. And there are a lot of planets that are just like ours. So why shouldn't there be life out there? I mean, today that's a widely accepted proposition. But back then, nobody would talk about it. If you believed in anything, you were a kook, even though the basic thing that every school child is taught about is to keep an open mind and to test the things you hear and see, and eventually you'll find something. Lee was talking about all this stuff, and he was taking serious a lot of accounts that people weren't, and his show was just great, and I became a fan of his. Now, years later, I get a job at ABC. This is after the OJ trial. And I start writing about stuff that was on the fringe of popular culture and on the fringe of science. And he took a job at ABC, at ABC Radio, where he was writing about documentaries and historical stuff. And there came that day where I was like, are you that Lee Spiegel? And he was. It was like meeting a hero of mine. And I brought him over to Huffington Post eventually, and we've been friends for years and years, and that's he's right. A wonderful man.
He sure is. And he loves what he does, Buck, with you. He loves it.
Yeah. He is just the sweetest of men, and he is, I think, one of the most literal men I've ever met. He is also devoted to accuracy, and I think that's why he survived so long doing what he's done. When you read Lee's copy as an editor, as a newsman, you realize that there's rarely ever a mistake in there. And when I say a mistake, a factual error or even a grammar mistake, a spelling mistake, you know. At Huffington Post, like all news organizations, we keep track of the errors that writers produce. And, and he has among one of the best records, the least amount of mistakes of anyone in this entire giant news organization. And I respect him so much because of that. If I could tell a sort of intimate story about Lee.
Sure. If it's okay with him, huh?
Well, I'll go out on a limb. I'll put a friendship on the line. When his father passed away, he went back up to Maine, and he wrote his father's obituary in the Concord Monitor.
That is not easy.
And those of you who still have small papers in your community know that they let the family members write obituaries for their loved ones. Lee wrote his, and I read it, and his father was an inspector at a clothing factory. And of course, Lee's father would be involved in quality control.
Yeah.
He would be so devoted to accuracy, because Lee is just like his father, devoted to accuracy.
I love that.
And it made me cry reading that. And I think if you're going to write about this stuff and talk about the things that you talk about and try and walk in the footsteps of Fort or even Robert Ripley, you have to be devoted to the truth. You have to be devoted to being accurate, because when you talk about things that people want to doubt or things that, that popular culture and mainstream doesn't want to support, you have to be accurate. You have to be devoted to honesty.
Yep, you sure do. Let's take some calls here for you, Buck. Let's go to Ray in Selma, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm doing great, George. God, it's great to get on. I finally got through after a while. And
good.
Great show tonight. And I was wondering, I had a little weird story that I heard last summer. And I heard it one night, I think it was on Fox Radio News, and it was on for one night. In fact, they played it on their hourly news on a couple of news cycles, and then it went away, and I never heard anything about it again. There was nothing about it in the Central California papers. I called the Fresno Bee, the Selma paper. Nobody heard anything. I had my friend's wife go online for me. And I talked to a few people. Nobody heard anything about it. And I even had my friend Chuck online the other day. Anyway, the thing is, last summer in Rhode Island, there was a woman sitting on a beach, and there was an explosion, and it lifted her up out of her beach chair. I guess she was like pretty close to the beach wall, you know, from the boardwalk, from the parking lot, and she wasn't too far into the beach. She was in her chair on the sand, and the force was so great, the explosion actually, from my understanding, and I think I'm pretty clear about this, lifted her up out of the chair and threw her about 8 to 10 feet up against the concrete beach wall.
Wow.
And you know, of course, emergency crews came, and they, you know, local police, the local energy company was contacted to find out, you know, by the local authorities if there had been any, you know, underground gas explosions, natural gas lines that had melt, you know, that had let go and just, you know, blew, and nothing. They couldn't find anything. And I guess they said something about the state police possibly becoming involved in the FBI. And the woman was shaken up a little bit, but she wasn't seriously injured. And I guess that and that was it. And they just had no explanation for it whatsoever. And I was wondering if you had heard anything about that. That was last summer. I can't remember the exact month, but it was in Rhode Island.
Wow, that's a story. Buck, I haven't heard that one. Have you?
No, I have not. That's worth looking into, and I'm going to write that down and take a look. We have some databases that have local newspapers, and you say that happened in Rhode Island?
Yes, Rhode Island was the state.
And do you have a city there?
No, I don't. I just remember Rhode Island. I heard it on two hourly news cycles on Fox the same night, and I can't remember. They probably did mention a city, but I probably missed it. And I think they probably would have, but I know that it was in the state of Rhode Island, and what I remember is that they said that they had contacted the local energy company, see if there were any underground natural gas line malfunctions, and there wasn't, and they had no explanation as to why this had occurred, but the blast was of such force that it actually lifted her up out of her chair, beach chair, and threw about 8 to 10 feet up against the wall.
She's lucky.
I don't know how that could hurt.
Yeah.
And you said that about a year ago, so I'm going to look that up. And luckily you're talking about one of the smallest states, I think, if not the smallest.
That'll be easy to track, Buck, I think.
You'll
find that
Thank you for not reporting something like that in Texas.
Thanks, Ray. Appreciate it. Next up, let's go to Jeannie in Mansfield, Ohio. Hello, Jeannie. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to share this family story.
Sure.
My aunt grew tired of her arrogant, fledgling pilot husband and his know-it-all behavior. This is during Skylab debris falling.
Yeah.
And so, for a practical joke on April Fool's, she had some friends of hers fashion what she referred to as a nose cone, upended dirt on their property, and went off to work. Well, the joke ended up being on her, because by the time she got home, he had officials from two military bases in NASA there. And she got to explain herself.
She got
like
even.
People came from far away to see what that was. What did they actually use in place of the space debris?
That's a good question too, Buck. She's gone now, but there, in your history, in terms of weird stories, which one stands out the most?
Well, in what sort of way? As sort of like
the one you will never forget.
There are a bunch of them, but I love doing a story about the company that was taking human remains and not only cremating them into the basic carbon from which the most basic elements in life, but turning cremated human remains into diamonds. I thought that story was
the most bizarre
thing that I ever heard.
That's, it sounds a little like the movie Soylent Green.
Yes. And there are a few people out there who are wearing gems around their neck and on their wrist and on their finger as necklaces, bracelets, rings, and it is Uncle Irving, or it was Aunt Jeannie. And the best part about this is I got to write a story and begin it, "Hey, my wife is a real gem." That's what this guy said, you know.
Let's go to Rick in San Antonio. Get a call in here. Hey, Rick, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good.
Well, I've got an April Fool's joke that I pulled on my wife last year. I came to drive for a large trucking company, and my partner came out of the bunk as I was driving down the road last April 1st and asked me what kind of prank are we going to pull on our wives this year. So we thought about it and came up with what we thought at the time was a funny April Fool's joke. If we would have thought this through to its logical conclusion, not so much. My wife and I talk to each other every single day on the phone. I call her up, and I've got 1,500,000 miles of accident-free driving. I called her up and said, there's been a terrible accident. Three people were very seriously injured. I said, the ambulances are leaving now, and it was my fault.
Oh.
And she goes, "Oh, my God." And I've got her on speakerphone, and she starts crying. And my partner and I are looking at each other, and I'm like, "Well, that was a brilliant idea."
Yeah.
And I, honey, April Fool's.
That one didn't work.
No, and my wife does not swear, usually. After she called me just about every single name in the book and a few I think she made up on her own, hung up the phone on me, and I looked at my partner and said, "Okay, your turn." He goes, "Oh, no way, absolutely not." So I suggest if you're going to pull a prank, you think it through. was logical conclusion. This year I got her 3 dozen roses, which
that's good. Much better. I love it. Hey, Buck, give us your website with the Huffington Post. And, of course, you've wrote a very cool book called The Wolf Files that we've talked about before. It's still available to folks?
Oh, yeah, it sure is. It's on Amazon. The website is HuffPost Weird News. You just put that into Google and you'll get there. Or just go to the front of the Huffington Post and you'll find it. We love the support we get from you, George. Thank you very much.
You're one of our favorites, my friend.
Thank you.
So what's your take on the presidential election so far?
Oh, my gosh. I think the most salient point, I think, is this, is whether you're on the left or the right, there's Donald Trump on the right and Bernie Sanders on the left, and they're both doing surprisingly well. If you ask people a year ago whether those people would be serious contenders, you'd probably get a laugh. And they're both an expression of, to me, of the same thing. And that is, people are dissatisfied with Washington. They're dissatisfied with the mainstream. And if you're a Democrat or Republican, your wishes aren't being expressed over there. And that's why I think people are going to them, and their candidacies are so unlikely. And they're doing so well. As different as those two people are, I think they're saying one thing in particular, and that is the Midwest, free trade in particular, has left behind a whole bunch of people. The people who are working in Ohio, the people who are working in the industrial Midwest.
Well, that's going to change, Buck. That's going to change. Hey, thanks for being on the program this April 1st. We'll be back in a moment. Open lines on Coast to Coast AM. I want your weird stories, plus anything else goes.